It's the 14th. Happy VD, everyone. that's a joke. Valentine's Day, but VD. Oh, speaking of, Kathleen's ready with a joke. You got a joke?
I heard it on the radio this morning.
Let's hear it.
So, there's this lady on an airplane who got kicked off because she tried to smuggle in an emotional support cat. And so when they're like forcing her off the plane and everything, she would like burst into tears and was like sobbing, which is really good that she had her emotional support cat to like watch and absolutely not care.
Yeah, cats, yeah. Yeah, you're on your own, Tucker. Okay. Exam number one is for chapter one. We should have it Tuesday, but it depends on what we get done today. If we don't get a whole lot done today, we'll postpone to Thursday. But then we have a problem because then you don't want to waste time, obviously. But it's going to be on chapters one, so the introduction to investments, risk versus return, and the overview of investments. Now make sure you have gone through in detail. Let's take a look at this guy. The securities handouts, okay? We want to make sure you understand this guy right here. So you should be able to, and you don't have to use this verbatim, but describe in, you know, one or two or three sentences to somebody who knows nothing about stocks or bonds or mutual funds, you should be able to describe it in just a few sentences, because I'm going to ask you to do that. And then in chapter four, well, mutual funds, we said we want you to make sure you've got those share classes, how the funds are charging you for their services, and then the mutual fund types that we went through on Tuesday, realizing that they're just the major types. There are many, many others. Okay? Also, the Chapter 1 assignments are due. If you don't have them today, turn them in on Tuesday. I prefer they print it out, but if you want to send them to me, make sure you... I'll probably forget them, so my apologies. I will not forget them, but just lose them because I get so many emails every day. Okay? So now, where were... Oh, first of all, oh, by the way, don't forget the investment club today. We're not going to do anything investing. We're going to do just mundane stuff. But if you haven't had your taxes done yet, free tax preparation going on now. So pass this puppy around. Pass this around. Free tax preparation. And you, too, can get college credit and get certified as a tax preparer. So how are we doing? Not bad. We're still up about 5% or so. A little over 5%. Yeah, that's not bad at all. Almost 6. And who's our kicker? Is that... That's a marijuana stock. Volatility. Anyone sell anything? Sell some winners? Or sell our losers?
No, it's going to go up.
It's going to go up, Canopy? Yeah, okay, all right, he's sure of it. Okay, he's hanging on, double down. Buy some more, buy some more. We don't have any more. We're out of cash.
Right now.
It's on sale, right? Yeah, right, sure. Okay. All right, so where were we? We were about, we had gone through all the different categories and types and different. And then we had gotten to the mutual fund of mutual funds. Am I forgetting something? Let me make sure. You do securities hand up. Make sure you do securities. Okay, good. We had gotten to these guys, and your assignment is to, there's two parts for chapter four, is to go investigate the thrift savings plan. Anybody in the military? Federal employee, do you have a TSP?
Sure.
Okay, so yeah, this is very useful for him because one of his retirement plans. But it's actually a very good plan, folks. It's what I like about it is it's simple. There are only a few choices. What you'll find in some of these retirement plans is they'll give you dozens and dozens of choices, and that's great for people who know what the hell they're doing. But other people just go, they don't know where to touch. They don't know what to do. They don't know what a growth and income fund versus a growth fund versus aggressive growth, bonds, stocks, they don't know. So they either, as we said, go put everything on red number 7, or they put everything in the money market and they got 30 years to go. So that's why these things are so important now. you look, oh, when am I going to retire? Oh, 2040, 2050. Boom, they'll do it for you. Now, what, do they do a good job? Some do, some don't. I'm not, like I said, I'm not that enamored with them, but I know what the hell I'm doing, whereas a lot of people don't. Okay, now, those were the major classifications of mutual funds, but there are many dozens of others. You may have heard of hedge funds, and the truth is, folks, hedge funds are not legally mutual funds. They get lumped in with mutual funds, but they are totally different. There's no regulatory oversight. They've become a major force in the industry. They have sky-high fees, and some of them do very, very well. Others are really horrible because of those sky-high fees. So my recommendation is stay far away from them. It used to be you had to have $100,000 to lose before they let you even put your money in here. But now with $5,000 or $10,000, you can put your money in here. Can you get it out the next day like a mutual fund? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Sometimes they say, oh, you have to wait until this period before you can redeem your shares. So I just tell people, stay away from them. Now, if you really are in that rarefied air where you could lose $100,000, it wouldn't be the end of the world, good luck. Good luck. Bear funds. We're going to talk about bulls versus bears. These are funds that try to make money when the market goes down. It's not easy to do. It can be done, but it's not easy to do. Again, I stay away from these things. We'll discuss precious metals and hard assets, gold, silver, pork bellies, at the end of the semester. Now, here's an interesting choice for some people who want to get into real estate but don't really want to be a landlord. REITs, real estate investment trusts, and we'll discuss those in detail again at the end, in alternative investments. But these are companies that were not really, they're not companies, they're trusts. So there's a little tricky, a little, they go by different laws. But to all purposes, for our purposes, they look like a corporation, they look like a stock. And it allows you to invest in real estate. This trust, this entity, manages the shopping centers and warehouses and office buildings and hotels and what else? Malls and the like and apartments. I'm sorry? Yeah, developments, right. They because does Walmart actually own the building that they do business in? Sometimes, but usually no. Vons, Home Depot, they enter into very long leases. They enter into 30, 50-year leases with these entities, these real estate investment trusts. It's their job to actually manage the property. That's their job. I mean, Home Depot's job is to sell you DIY stuff, whereas the REITs, that's their job, and they pay a dividend. It's not really a dividend, but it looks like a dividend. The problem with them is there's just not that many of them. There's not that many real estate investment trusts. So you buy a mutual fund that just invests in these guys, and you're not really getting a whole lot of diversification. You're concentrated in these real estate companies, and if real estate does well, they're going to do well. If not, oh well. Now, if you do your little research and start nosing around, that's what we want you to do, you're going to find that there are just all these exotic boutique, whatever you want to call them, funds. What do you think the stock car stocks funds invest in? You're absolutely right, Kathleen. You're at NASCAR. Because I have a hard time believing this, dear student. I have a hard, but the most popular spectator sport in the United States is not football, not basketball or baseball, it's NASCAR. On Sunday afternoon, 200,000 people trundle on down to the track and watch cars go around an oval at 200 miles an hour. Sounds like a great time, isn't it? And what do you see on those cars and on their jackets? And on their hats, promotions. And these people are, they're serious. I mean, if Folgers is the official coffee of the NASCAR, that's the coffee they buy. And then what do you think the Paws Tombstone Fund? Now, Paws is the name of the company, Tombstone, the mutual fund company. Tombstone is the name of the fund. What do you think they invested in? Cemeteries, right, exactly. Mortuaries, embalmers, caskets. Well, everybody's going to die, right? And thankfully, so did the Paws Tombstone Fund. And now, You cannot make this up. Somebody started the Chicken Little Growth Fund because some people are worried about the sky falling on their heads. You don't believe me, do you? Just look it up. It's in there. Go type it into any search engine. There's the Timothy Fund. I don't know if it's still around. That's for good Christians because of Paul's letter to Timothy about doing good works or something. I don't know. Look it up. It's out there. The choices are endless, and so are the fees. Now, finally, we are going to bang index funds. Because what you're going to hear people say is, oh, you should only invest in passively managed index funds. The funds that we looked at last week, most of them were actively managed, except for the Vanguard Index and the Fidelity Index funds. These funds buy and hold the portfolio stocks or bonds equivalent to those in a specific market index. Now, what is an index? When we get to Chapter 5, we'll talk about the S&P 500, the Dow Jones, the Wilshire, and all these different... They're just lists. They're just lists of stocks. And the research started back in the late 1960s, early 70s, where they would throw a dart to the dartboard, or a monkey picking stocks or whatever, and decide, did the random portfolio do as well as the active portfolio or worse? And it turns out that many actively managed mutual funds do not beat the market. Well, there's a few reasons for that that we've already discussed, the fees, and also the fact that, you know, people have to do well or they get kicked out. But there are mutual funds. There are mutual funds that have been around for decades, and we'll take a look at them, a few of them, that have done very, very well. So when people say, nobody can beat the index, you tell them, it's not true. We're actually, when we get into stocks, we're going to take a look and try to find people who have beaten the index over time. So don't let anybody tell you that index funds are the only way to invest. They're not. The rationale came from the research in the early 1970s, statistically showed that many of the actively managed funds did not beat the market, the monkey throwing darts at a dartboard. However, many do. Many have over decades. And then sometimes it just doesn't, it's not comparing apples to apples. We looked at remember the equity income funds? They're stock funds, and they get compared to the S&P 500, but they shouldn't. You shouldn't compare them to the S&P 500 because the S&P 500 has the growth stocks and the boring stocks. So if that fund doesn't beat the S&P 500, great. It also had 30% less volatility, which means it went down a whole lot less when the market went down. So it's something that gets a pet peeve with me because obviously these people they all listen to one another. This guy said that index funds are the only way to invest, so that's what I'm going to say. They're like beating the drum, and obviously it's not true. So here are some of the indices that are very popular. We're going to look at these in detail in Chapter 5, so don't try to remember them. The only one you really should remember is S&P 500. You hear about it all the time, right? You can't help but hear about it. Oh, did it beat the S&P 500? Who cares? Did it do what I wanted to do? Yes, okay, it's good. And then we'll look at the MSCI and the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index, which used to be called the Wilshire 5000, which I think is a lot easier. And if you want to hear why this is the perfect investment, just go to ifa.com or any of these other dozens of places who've now decided that active managers are going to go away and they should just leave right now. The problem is with index, in my humble opinion, is that they're not managed. They're managed by some group of people at Standard & Poor's or Dow Jones or Russell or whatever, and they can get skewed. Do you like that word, skewed? What does it mean? It means sort of bent out of shape. Bent out of shape. The popular international index, which is being replaced now, but it's called the IFA, MSCI. Forget about this. We'll look at it next couple weeks. But this thing, for decades, was the index to look outside the United States, international, foreign. And so at the end of the 1980s, some of you weren't around, many of you weren't around, but there, the idea was that Japan was going to take over the world, right? Japan, now it's China, right? But now Japan's going to take over the world. And the Japanese stock market had been bid up, the price had been bid up to an astronomical value. So you had the IFA. You said, okay, I got plenty of United States stocks. I want to go buy some international. So I'm going to go buy the IFA, the International Index. Well, at the time, at the end of 1989, the IFA was 60% in Japan. One company. So Canada, Western Europe, Australia, the Far East, Hong Kong, Singapore. Who else? Those are the biggies. And then Japan was 60%, and the rest of it was 40%. Now, what's price to earnings? We'll get to that in detail. But the PE of 52, that's really high. That's really high. So if things don't work out the way everyone thinks they're going to work out, the parachutes had better be very large. And in this case, they weren't. And Japan's stock market went down over 80% over the next decade or so. So you thought you were getting broad diversification, right? Mutual funds diversification of a basket of international stocks, and you were getting 60% Japan at a time when Japan was really expensive. The same thing happened at the end of the 1990s, at the bubble of the internet bubble as it's called. The Standard & Poor's 500, which is traditionally the 500 largest companies in the United States, was one-third information technology, internet, computers, you know, wireless, all those companies, with a PE of almost 60. Whereas everybody else, we're talking energy, healthcare, materials, housing, consumer staples, all the other things that make up the United States economy, was, you know, kind of high at 19, but two-thirds of the S&P 500. Over the next 2.5 years, the Standard & Poor's lost almost 50, about 50%, not quite, 49 point whatever, I forget. But the tech sector lost over 80%. And the internet sector lost over 90%. So again, you thought, hey, I'm buying the S&P 500, I'm broadly diversified, United States economy. You had one-third in a sector of the economy that was really high, really expensive, and then, of course, reverted to the mean. Does that make sense? We'll come back to this, folks, because what is PE? It's a very subtle statistic that we'll discuss in detail. But just remember that when anybody tells you that index funds are the only way to invest, you just nod your head yes and tell them to take business 123. All right, now, index funds have begot. You like that word? The biblical world. He begot that guy and he begot that guy. Begot, begot. ETFs. We discussed these last week. Exchange-traded funds are open-ended mutual funds that trade like a closed-end mutual fund on the exchange. There's no limit on the number of shares. Very popular. They can be traded throughout the day, whereas most mutual funds, you get one price at the end of the day, and you only can trade them. They don't want you to trade them, but these things, go right ahead. Most all ETFs are passively managed, but now we are seeing more and more that are actively managed. So that blur, where that coupling between index funds and ETFs is blurring, because now, although most of them are passively managed, meaning that they just look at the list of Standard & Poor's 500 or IFA or whatever, now we're seeing more and more that are actively managed. But the cool thing about ETFs is they got great names like spiders and diamonds and cubes. Is that cool? The name is, you know, important. Standard & Poor's, Dow Jones Industrial and Diamond. No, not cool. Okay, anyway, that's the way it is. Now, how are we doing? Is this making any sense? You guys are really quiet, but it's not the most exciting day, of course. Socially responsible funds. Now they're giving it a different name. They're calling it environmental, social, and governance or something. ESG is being called. But it started off, I have to change this, I guess. I have to look this up. Because when they start doing stuff like that, like BRIC, you remember BRIC years ago? Brazil, Russia, India, and China. They're symbolic of the emerging markets, but those, you couldn't find four different countries. Those countries are so different than one another. And then you got the FANGs, and now it was then turned into FANG, Farsbook, Alphabet, Apple, Netflix, and Google. But Google's really Alphabet, so it should be fine. Whenever you start seeing this stuff, it's just like, go away. Somebody trying to sell them a book. But socially responsible funds have been around for decades. Long time ago, folks, 20s, and the first one, SIM, came out 20s, and then the 50s, and then the 70s is when it started to take off. But before the 1970s, they were just mutual funds that did not invest in alcohol or tobacco. And that was considered socially responsible because there were a lot of people who just, they would not have anything to do with alcohol or tobacco, even though if you want to make money, those are great industries to invest in. Right? Well, what's going on with marijuana now, right? It's going to be a biggie, and the beer companies are not too happy about it, but that's okay. Then in the 1970s, hippy-dippy started getting polluting, building weapons, nuclear power plants, destroying the rainforest, companies that exploit labor. Are there any companies left? Well, it turns out that throughout the 80s and 90s, these socially responsible funds did pretty well. Why? Because many of these companies that fit the criteria were software companies or technology companies that didn't exploit the rainforest or didn't build nuclear weapons or didn't build power plants. And so, some have done very well for their investors. And then, possibly as a backlash to socially responsible funds and their perceived political overtones, there's a company, the Vice Fund. Right. Can you guess, right? Alcohol, gambling, defense firms. And although it's a small fund, but it has very high annual fees. Check it out. It's actually done pretty well, the Vice Fund. I wouldn't invest in it because it's more, again, concentrating in things that are nasty. Okay, and now if you go to the Wall Street Journal, this is actually pretty old. This is about 10, 12 years old. But look, just a couple of the ones that we saw in our list are actually there. There's the Equity Income, Global Health and Biotech. There's a sector fund. Look at all the different short-term, intermediate-term, long-term bond funds. So you're going to see an explosion of different classifications and the like. But realize that they're all subcategories of the funds that we looked at. Have you gone to Morningstar yet? Anybody? The assignment for Chapter 4, not only to research TSP, but it's also to download a few or two at the most, annual reports for mutual funds that you're interested in. And, of course, there are six mutual fund families on the website that you can. They're just six out of dozens. Four of them I really like, and two are okay. I won't tell you which ones. You decide. And you're going to do some research. One of the companies that's very popular with people because of the internet presence is Morningstar. They started out with this style box, and it really was not very useful, in my humble opinion, because what it did is it got people to think, oh, I need a mutual fund that fits every one of these boxes. Hence, it actually encouraged more mutual fund companies to explode the number of offerings at that, so that everybody had a large cap value fund, or everybody had a small cap blend fund. And so I don't use them. Now they have ownership zones. It's the same thing, but they make an oval as opposed to a little box here. And I don't know anybody who actually uses them, and I don't. But they say that the ownership zones are even better. And you're going to see this when you do your research. The other major company is Lipper, and they never wanted to put their stuff on the Internet. You had to pay. Well, they put it on the Internet, but you had to pay for it. They had a wall, or a paywall. But now they've been bought by some other company, and so now you can get a lot of the stuff from Lipper online. But again, go to the library, and it's all there, courtesy of your tax dollars. Okay, so now, fund families. Fund families. We don't even call them, I guess we still call them fund families. We just call them mutual fund companies. Because back about 50 years ago, a mutual fund company might have had one or two mutual funds. But as the competition heated up, not Fidelity, they've always had dozens and dozens, and now they have hundreds. But as the competition heated up, more and more companies came up with more and more mutual funds. So they started calling it a fund family. A family of funds, a fund family exists when one investment company manages a group of mutual funds. Funds in the family vary in their objective. So we might have the aggressive growth, equity income within Fidelity, within Vanguard, within Franklin Templeton. And you can move your money back and forth between them without incurring another sales charge. Well, that wouldn't be very nice of them to do that, right? But what's going to happen? If it's in a regular account, the IRS says, ooh, you just sold an investment. You know, you need to declare a capital gain or a capital loss. So you're going to trigger a taxable transaction. Now, if it's in your retirement account, in your 401k, your 403b, your Roth IRA, no. You can move it all you want. And this is what started happening. Remember we talked about the scandals? People started moving their stuff in between mutual funds all the time. And so certain companies kind of let it happen. And in fact, some of them were doing it inside the company. We talked about a strong and alliance. But most companies, no, this is not what you're supposed to do. You know, so what most companies did is they said, look, if you want to do that, fine. We're going to charge you 2%. If you move it and then move it back within 30 days, we'll charge you 2%, give it back to your shareholders. Other companies, just like Vanguard, said, no, we're not going to let you do it. America, no, you can't do that. We're not going to let you. If you pull the money out, we're not going to let you put it back in for at least 30 days. So that was the discouraged trading. And so now nobody allows it. Nobody. If they do allow it, they charge you. Forbes said that decades ago, and I really like it. Choose a family, not a fund. Yes?
So why are they still against that if it's making money?
Because it's not, they're mutual funds. They're long-term investments. Now, ETFs that you can buy and sell on the, go right ahead. You know, do whatever you want. It's your problem. But you're basically making it hard for the mutual fund company to do their business. Because if they know or if they see funds going in, funds going out, money going in, coming out, it's very difficult for them to make any kind of plan if they have to basically deal with your foibles. So it makes it hard for the mutual fund company to actually do their business. Plus, it's not a trading vehicle. Mutual funds should not be considered a trading vehicle. ETFs, trade away. Good luck. But no, most mutual funds, no, they're not. They don't want that. In fact, I had a client who was doing it, and I kept saying, "Don't do that. Will you stop doing it? You're going to get yourself in trouble." And of course, he did. He screwed up, you know, big time. Lost a lot of money because you think you know what you're doing, but what's the saying? If you don't know who you are, the stock market is a very expensive place to find out. Discover yourself. It's a very expensive place. So here are the top 10. And, of course, this is nebulous because it depends on how you categorize them. BlackRock is actually the world's largest money manager, but most of the money is not in mutual funds. They have other investments. But Vanguard, by far, in terms of mutual funds, is the largest. Right now, they've convinced people that they're on their side, that it's owned by the shareholders, which is not. It's not a mutual, it's not a credit union. It's not a mutual life insurance company. But they do have a very good ethic in that they say, we put our investors, we try, not the only ones, but we do our best to put our investors' interest ahead of our interests. And so they do a pretty good job with that. Fidelity used to be the largest company for decades. They're based outside Philly, actually, Vanguard. Fidelity in Boston with a bunch of other mutual fund companies. That was the cradle of mutual fund companies. They were the biggest for decades, and then Vanguard overtook them. American is strange. American's actually based in Los Angeles. They're run by a company called the Capital Group. And for decades, they were silent. They wouldn't do any advertising. Even on their building, they have one of the biggest skyscrapers. I don't know if they own it or not, but they're in one of the biggest skyscrapers in downtown L.A. There's no name on the building. You've seen this building in lots of movies because the movie the directors, the movie companies love it because they don't have to wipe out the name of the company. So you've seen this building many times. T. Rowe Price is based in Baltimore. Very good company. They were one of the first, not the only ones, American was also, who went overseas. J.P. Morgan Chase, which is, that's the same company. They bought a bunch of mutual fund companies, and now they're one of the largest. BlackRock, very smart company. Those of you who are interested in getting in the business, maybe at the higher levels, read about Mr. Fink and his rise to fame. And they're the ones who run the TSP. They're the ones who actually run the Thrift Savings Plan. And Franklin Templeton, a very good company, been around for a decade. It was Franklin, and they merged Templeton, they moved another one, mutual fund shares. They're based somewhere in the Bay Area. TIAA is a Teachers Insurance Annuity Association, and they started out just for teachers and people in education. But then they moved into they had a special deal, and the other companies were bitching and moaning and saying, TIAA has got these tax mean, we don't think it's fair. And TIAA said, fine, we'll compete with the general public, just let us now, we'll compete with general companies, just let us go out to the general public, because before they were just for teachers. And then they merged with Nuveen. Dimensional funds, I know nothing about these other than advisors really like them. So I should really do more research. There's dozens. PIMCO, Pacific Investment Company, based in Newport Beach. Very hoity-toity. And they got some good funds. They got some good funds. Cool? So now what we're going to do, you're going to do this your own. You're going to do some research, find a couple funds that you like. But let's take a look at some of the offerings of some of these mutual funds. And, of course, on the website, as I said, under Chapter 4, are links to offerings from just 6 different companies. And, again, there are dozens. Oppenheimer, MFS, Janus, there's so many of them. I can't even begin But here are 6 companies. I said 4 of them I really like. Now, Fidelity. Fidelity is a very good marketing company. But if you click on this one right here, you get about 300 or so. They have more. Okay, it's only 289, but it used to be more than that. And if you say Fidelity funds only, if you remove this, you get, it used to be over 11,000. So what Fidelity does is just, hey, come to us. You can buy any mutual fund, or mostly any mutual fund, through us. We sell everything. They're not stupid, they're very smart. And so people go, but then what happens? What happens? This is what happens. Okay, this is old, but it's cool. And this is from 2009. Of course, some of these are gone. They've added some. But every single one of these is a mutual fund. So you go to Fidelity, and you say, I want to buy a mutual fund. It's fine. Here. Well, they don't give you this anymore. It's all on the Internet. But they say, go to our website. But they used to give you this. Here. Do you want Blue Chip Value, Equity Income 2, Large Cap Value, 130/30 Large Cap, Disciplined Equity, Disciplined Dividend Growth, Fidelity Fund, Growth and Income Fund, Growth and Income Portfolio, Mega Cap Stock, Stock Selector, Tax Managed Stock, Trend, Value Discovery, Blue Chip Growth, Capital Appreciation, Contra Fund, a very good fund, by the way, Contra, Export and Multinational, Fidelity 50, Focus Stock, Growth Company, Growth Discovery, Independence, Large Cap Growth, Large Stock, Cap Stock, Magellan, OTC Portfolio, Mid Cap Value, Value, Leverage Company Stock, Low Price Stock, Value Strategies, Growth Strategies, Mid Cap Growth. There's 9 more pages. So which mutual fund do you want?
Dividend.
You want the dividend one? Yeah, okay. Well, what do people... You get that deer in the headlights there, right? And that's what I'm hoping to give you, actually, because it ain't easy. The truth is, it's not easy. Once you've chosen your mutual fund or funds, or you have an advisor that recommends, then there's nothing for you to do. Just make sure your $50 or $100 is in your account, or it comes out of your paycheck or whatever. But where do you even start? And what they do is they did what we did. They start with stock, and then move to the most, the most volatile, and then move to the least volatile, mid cap, small cap, index fund. They used to call them the Spartan, but I don't think people really understood the Spartans were very abstemious. There's that word again. Cheap. Sparse. That's where we get the word, sparse. They were cheap, so I don't think people understood. Maybe they thought it was something to do with, you know, Trojans or something like that, Greeks. Or, and then there's their foreign, international, right, country-specific, Canada, China. They have two Japanese, Nordic. You can invest in Sweden, and which, as we saw, was done better than everybody else. Emerging markets, index funds, outside. Here's some special. Now, Fidelity started this. They started this, and now they're the biggie. But there are lots of people. They gave you these what are called sector funds. See, if you wanted to invest just in chemicals, you knew something about the chemical industry, and you knew that there was going to be a big move in that industry, you could buy just a mutual fund that just invests in chemicals. Are you with me? Understand? Now, why do we invest in mutual funds?
Diversification.
Diversification, professional money management. So does this make sense? In my humble opinion, no. But, again, if you knew something about the energy sector or financial services, put a little bit on your plate, okay? Don't throw up at the farm because it could turn against you really poorly. But I'm not a big fan of these guys, and that's why. Whoops, what happened? Okay, there's more. Now we get to the bond funds. Look how many damn bond funds they have. They have two California bond funds, and then more bonds. Then here's that hybrid. We see, notice they put balance after the bond funds. Looking at these two right here, balance versus dynamic strategies. So without knowing anything else, we can infer that this guy is going to be more balanced, going to stay more stocks and bonds, whereas this guy is going to be more tactical, going to try to, let's see, let's put everything in stocks and very few in bonds, or the other way around, or maybe put everything in cash. So without knowing anything else, we would want to take a look at how they've done and more about them. Cool? Okay, here's the, there are Fidelity calls them freedom funds. If I'm going to retire in 2035 in my 401k plan, bingo, I pick 2035, and then they invest for me accordingly with their own mutual funds. Make sense? And you're going to see these are in the TSP that you're going to investigate. You're going to take a look at the TSP. Why did you stop doing that? I'm trying to move down. Why does it do that? Okay, now we're down to money markets. And look how many money. You don't need that many money market funds, Fidelity. And then here are the 529 college savings plans for California, for Delaware, for Arizona, for New Hampshire. And they better have Massachusetts because they're based in Boston. And so there's all the Fidelity funds. Which one do you want? The Contra fund? Yeah, check it out. Check out Contra. Guy is brilliant. Listen to him every... Go on YouTube, see if you can find any interviews with... What's his name? Will Danoff. No. Is that it? Will Danoff? I'm getting old. I know I am old. Okay. But check any interviews or any... because he's... But you know, that's the problem. He's been doing this for now almost 30 years. He's going to retire or die, right? Eventually. So I don't know how much. I don't know. Because he runs the Fidelity Contra Fund, and he's brilliant. He's really. I love listening to him talk, because he's not. He doesn't think of himself as any more than I'm just doing my job. But he has insights that are, that makes perfect sense. I like that idea. Okay, so that's Fidelity. Now let's go to Vanguard. Vanguard does the opposite. They start, and again, this is old. They don't have this anymore. You have to go on their website. But they start with the least riskiest and then move to the most riskiest. But they had about 120 or so. Now they think they have 180 funds. But there's the retirement funds, target date funds. Okay, they start with short-term. You see, lead short-term bond funds are less risky than intermediate-term, which are less risky than long-term bond funds. Now, they have the same idea. They have a balance fund, and then they have an asset allocation fund. You see the difference? Very subtle. The balance fund is going to stay 60, 40, 50, 50. Whereas the asset allocation fund might say, oh, we think stocks are a better deal right now. And stocks, bonds are a better deal or whatever. Now, here is one of my favorite companies. And this is called, no, I want that one right there. It's called American Funds. Now, throughout the semester, dear students, you are going to be bombarded with different investment alternatives. And I'm going to do my best to keep quiet and say, oh, yeah, you should invest in XYZ company or ABC company, because I want you to gravitate to the types of investments that make sense for you. So I'm going to do my best to not be a shill, so to speak, and push and jump up and down and say, except for American. Okay? This is my only chance. I love these guys. They are so cool. They've been around since 1930s, and they really got their heads screwed on straight. And what they do is they start off with the riskiest. They start with, see, it's red. See, that's red. Growth funds. They don't have any aggressive growth funds. They don't think they're in the best interest of the clients. I agree. So that's why we have our same sort of strategies, same sort of philosophies. And then they move to growth and income, where we want, yes, we want growth. We also want dividends. And then there's the equity income funds, the oatmeal, the balance funds, and then the bond funds, and then the tax exempt funds. Finally, until you get to the purple, I don't know why purple is so safe, but I guess it's purple heart. And what do you get from a money market fund? Well, actually, they're up. They're up to, you're going to see. Money market funds are up to about close to 2% now, right? 1 point. Have anybody done the assignment for chapter one yet? Yeah, they're getting close to 2% because the Fed's church. So they're ratcheting up interest rates. But what I like about this is it allows us to, let's see if we can make it a little bit. No, You can see that pretty well. Look at the lifetime averages of the growth funds. Now, these guys have been around relatively new. See, 99 and 90. And, of course, 2000 and 2008 were both really bad bear markets, which knocked them on their heels. But here, 1967, 1984, 73, 10, 11, 13 and a half. That's the growth, a very famous fund, the Growth Fund of America. New perspective. Now, when you get to the growth and income, you'll see that it's a little not. Some of them actually done pretty darn well. 12 and a half for fundamental investors. But 10, where's 12, 12, 11 and a half? Again, look, when did this guy start? 2014. And emerging markets have had a pretty rough time since the Great Recession. So, not very good. Other one. And again, international. 2008. What, did they start at the great time? 2008, October, like, blah. So, not so great. But you see it going down a little bit? Now, watch what happens when we get to equity income. 9, well, this one's actually done pretty well. 11, balance, 10, not, again, 2011, global, not so great. But then you get to the bond funds, 2, 8, 6, 2.5, 4, 3.5. You see what's going on? As you go down the risk versus reward, you should see your return over time. Now, in any one year, you don't know what the hell's going to happen. But over the long term, unless the world ends, you should be seeing pretty good return from stocks as opposed to bonds. It has to be that way. Why? We'll discuss that later on when we get to bonds versus stocks. But, cool. So, you ready to invest in stocks? Let me show you what you're up against. Because this was 2008. These are the same funds, right? Fewer, because they didn't have some of them. But there's that Growth Fund of America. New economy. And these guys, traditionally, and they've always done it, doesn't mean they're going to do it in the past, when the market goes down, they do better than the rest of the world. So some growth funds went down 70% or more, 60%. Your $10,000 became $3,500. Your $10,000 became $5,000, $4,800. How did the growth and income do? They still went down 34%, 42%, 38%. How did the equity income do? See what's going on here? Oatmeal. the spices burned us. They burned us. They burned us. Does the oatmeal burn us? Well, it's a lot better than minus 60%, right? $10,000 is now $6,400, $6,800, $7,000. How did the balance fund do? Down 30%. Are you with me? You see what's going on? This is going to happen. Now, I don't know when. I don't know how. It could happen like 2000 to 2002, where it just kept going down slowly, slowly, slowly. Or 2008, a bolt of lightning where the sky goes down 20% in 1 week. But it's going to happen. Now look what happened to the bond funds. The high yield bond fund, the we call high income, basically the junk bond fund, that went down 30%, like the balance fund. But notice the bond funds. Look, these guys. This guy went down, 15%. Who went up? What do these guys invest in?
America.
Yeah, they invest in treasury bonds, right? Everybody should say treasury bills. Wait, treasury bonds. What do you say? What do these guys invest in? Or you can say government bonds, government securities. So, what happens when the world ends? When there's a big problem like this, is people take their money and it's called a flight to quality. They rush it into treasury bonds because they feel that the United States government is going to stick around, but they don't know what's going to happen to all the companies. So these guys actually went up in that year. But they're the only ones. Everybody else went down unless you had your money in cash, unless you had your money in a money market mutual fund, because it's not going to lose money. You're not going to make a lot of money, but it's not going to lose money. So do you understand now? Do you see what you're up against? 2008 is going to happen again. I don't know when. I don't know how. It doesn't ever happen the exact same way, right? It happens. You just don't know how. And you have to be prepared for it. But if, yes. Okay, yes.
I wanted to ask,
Tomas.
For the funds that are losing 40, 50% during bad economic situations, if you were to wait it out, wouldn't it
Oh, yeah. Oh, no doubt. No, you came back. You came back. We're going to see that. We're going to see that today. You definitely came back if you stuck it out. But that's the key. That's the key. It's simple, but it ain't easy.
Don't panic, right?
Because if the world does end, if there's no food at the bottom, no gas at the Chevron station, the clothes are not at the Gap, the cell phones aren't working, the SDG and E&E is not pumping out electricity, the hospitals, the schools, the banks, the fire departments, the police departments are all shuttered in the trash and the sewers. Doesn't matter where your money is. You better have gotten out of the Western Hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere. Get down to Tierra del Fuego and learn to raise goats and eat the part that you think is not poisonous of the plants that you grow. You see, this is what you're up against. But the rewards are great, as we're going to see. We're going to see, folks, the news is good. The news is good. Okay, any questions, any thoughts? Okay, now let's do a real quick... Would you mind if we waited until next Thursday to take the exam? Would you mind if we do that? The only problem is we might waste a little bit of time and do something on Tuesday that's not real exciting, not having to do with the exam, which is, because I want to do, and we don't have time for it. We don't have time for the, I want to do a the mutual fund case studies. So next Thursday, I apologize, but I think that's important. Sometimes we get through it all, sometimes we don't. Okay, now, we're going to have a few slides about some nuts and bolts. But in my humble opinion, the best way for the vast majority, how many people are going to get $1 million or $500,000 inheritance? Don't raise your hand. But, most of us here, ain't going to happen, right? It just ain't going to happen. You're going to be that first generation that starts building the wealth, and your parents are going to be amazed at you, and your kids are going to think, this is really sharp. I mean, my son, when he realized what I was doing, kind of went, what? He didn't say anything. He just kind of went, oh, he looked at me. I showed him. I started showing him. He's old enough now to understand what the hell's going on. And we showed him the trust, and we showed him the investments, and he kind of went, oh, that's not pretty sharp. Oh, yeah. Hell no. No. He gets the house when we die. He got his education. We helped pay for San Diego State. And then I'm spending that money. I hope I... But there's the problem. Here's the problem. You don't know how long you're going to live. That's the problem. You know, when you go to these real estate... Not real estate. When you go to these retirement planning things, they talk about all these different things. Say, can you answer the toughest question? When am I going to die? Because if you know when you're going to die... You know, you write that last check, or you bounce it, or whatever. You know, you slide it. You right before you kick over, yes.
So all jokes aside,
it's not. It's you gotta laugh or you cry.
It's like, you know, we always whenever we go into a discussion about certain events, it always goes back to there's recession. So you have to always assume that recession.
Oh yeah, it could happen anytime. You don't know. Sure. Sure. Oh, yeah, sure. Once you have enough cash. This is what Warren Buffett does. He's sitting on tons of cash, and he just... This is what we're going to talk about, contrarians. That's
contrarian.
Yeah, those are contrarian investors. They wait until there's blood in the streets, and then they swoop in. The problem is you got to be willing to sit on your hands and just wait for things to go badly. And that's exactly what he did throughout the 2000s. He just kept saying, you know, stocks are too expensive. Then 2008, when people were panicking, is the world going to end? He wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times. He said, we are going to survive this. I'm investing. This is the best time to invest in decades. And he put his money where his mouth was. He went over to Goldman Sachs, invested $5 billion in special preferred stock, which we don't want, but he does. He went to... Oh, yeah, he's got billions to throw around. He put $5 billion into GE. Yeah, he's just sitting on it. He lives in the same house that he bought in 1958. Yeah, and they spend like $500,000. The house isn't even, I mean, I'm not sure it's worth a lot of money, but they spend $500,000 every year just on security on this house. He put $5 billion, he put $5 billion into GE. And then he put $10 billion into Bank of Armenia, Bank of America. Yeah, he had cash. He probably, maybe he could have sold some stuff or something like that. But remember, his company owns Geico. They own Dairy Queen. They own a ton of Coca-Cola. And they own Burlington Southern. They own See's Candy. Check it out. Berkshire Hathaway. Check out. Well, we're not there yet. But. Well, for the vast majority of us, it makes sense. We don't know when the darn recession is going to hit. We're just doing our... We know it's going to... Well, that's what they say, but I don't like when they say... Sometimes you'll hear people say necessary downturn. I really don't like that because, you know, we're not perfect. We would love it if we did not have a recession. If we could keep growing the economy so that everybody has food, clothing, and shelter, because remember, a lot of people are still living on $1 or $2 a day. But it doesn't work that way. In the past, history tells us that eventually the economy is going to get a little bit out of balance, something's going to be overextended, and then we're going to go in a downturn. So some people use the word inevitable in a downturn.
More like natural.
Well, it's man-made. But yeah, it's natural. It's going to happen. We know it. History tells us it's going to happen. Now, you look at some countries and they haven't had recession in decades. But they have a much simpler economy. Check out Australia. I don't know if they've had a recession in like 2 decades or something like that. But it's a different economy. They're sort of isolated. They don't have as much innovation and much, they don't, financial innovation is what got us in trouble the last time. So did I answer your question? We're going to see the different strategies. And for contrarians, yes. If you can sit on your hands and wait for the organic matter to hit the ventilating device and then rush in, great. I've done a little bit of that, and it worked out, you know, okay, but not so great, in 2008, where in the middle of October, the market had fallen 20%. So I had some extra money to put in. So I put a whole, I funded my simple IRA. Because normally I'm funding my 403B every month, my Roth IRA, my wife's Roth IRA every month, coming out of my paycheck, out of my checking account. And so I had some extra cash, and I funded my simple IRA. It then went down 24%. You know, it's like 2 weeks off. But yeah, contrarian. Hang on a minute. We'll get to that in a bit. All right. Okay, now, when you invest in a mutual fund, the default is automatic reinvestment. They're going to be spinning off dividends. They're going to be spinning off capital gains. And unless you say otherwise, they will just turn around and buy more shares for you. That's the default. If you want them to mail you a check, they don't want to do that. They want your bank account. They'll electronically send it to you. But either way, if you want them to send the dividends, the capital gains to you, they will. But typically, most people in the accumulation phase, this is more when you're living off your investments, you're going to want to reinvest these investments. Cool? Make sense? Okay, let's continue. Now, as we said, once you're in the distribution phase, and we'll take a look at that for some people, you will go to your mutual fund company, go to the website, and say, okay, I want every month for you to send me $100 or $1,000, whatever. And so this is the best way, in my humble opinion, to withdraw the money. And as we said, the conversion privilege, the exchange privilege, allows you to move money from one fund to another within the same family of funds. If it's not in a retirement account, you're going to trigger tax consequences. So how do we purchase mutual funds? Through the stock exchange, if they're ETFs, closed-end, open-end, through a broker, directly from the investment company. The best way, in my humble opinion, for the vast majority of us working grunts, is through payroll checking. When you sell it, the ETF, the closed-end fund, you have to go through the stock exchange, but the open-ended, through your broker, through your mutual fund, go to the website and have it automatically withdraw in your checking. So here's the deal. You guys start early. You start putting $50, $100 away for the next 30, 40 years. You then take $2,000 out, $3,000 out every month for the rest of your life. Is that a deal? Did I mention there's no guarantees? And it's going to be volatile if you invest in stocks and stock mutual funds? Yes. Okay, good. So now, taxes. We want to go through taxes quickly. I guess we really shouldn't ask this, but if you are interested in taxes, let's see. If I'm not sure if I ask you this, I'm going to ask you on the exam. But the dividends are taxed as income, 20% maximum, 15% typical, 5% minimum. Same thing is true for capital gains distribution. Reinvested dividends and capital gains are still taxable transactions. And so what happens is in a down year, the mutual fund is still making transactions and still throwing off distributions and capital gains. So you see the value of your mutual fund go down. You then get, if it's in a taxable, if it's in a retirement account, you don't care. But if it's in a taxable account, you're going to get a 1099. And you're going to owe taxes on the distributions and capital gains. But it lost money. And you're going to go to your mutual fund company and scream and holler, and they're going to say, sorry, that's the tax law. And then you're going to go to your Congress person and say, why am I paying taxes on something I lost money? So the Congress people go, what do we do? So there, every few years there's this talk of making these changes to the tax law that unrealized capital gains, in other words, you haven't taken the money yet, will not be taxed. It's not going to happen. I mean, the tax law is already so damn confusing, so complex, that this would make it insane. So if you're in a taxable account, or even if you're not, if you're in a, it's a good idea to save your year-end statements, December 31st, whatever year. Now with electronic, it's going to be there forever. It's going to be, but still, I print them out, put them with my taxes, so you have the last year's statement. Questions, thoughts, ideas? Yes?
Is there a minimum for reporting?
It's the same idea as the minimum for your taxable, which we talked about, but it's 121. Yeah. If you don't have to file, you don't have to file. So if it's, you're right. If it's a penny, no, they're not even going to send you a 1099. I forget what it is, $10. If it's not $5 or $10, they're not even going to send you a 1099. That's why you see, you might be getting 3 cents a month in your checking account these days. Are you getting that? Anybody has a checking account? You get 3 cents. And I said, when that first happened, I called my bank and said, Are you guys going to send me a 1099 for 45 cents? And, oh, no, sir. We're, you know, the IRS says you don't have to do that. I'm like, good. It's going to cost them $5, $10 to do it and cost me whatever. Okay. Sources of mutual fund information. How are we doing? Not bad. Not great, but that's okay. We're going to ask you to go in there and download the annual reports. Download prospectuses. Do research. It's a statement describing the risk factors, funds past performance, the type of investments, the funds portfolio, dividends, distributions, taxes, the funds management. Nobody reads these things. Nobody reads this unless they're trying to go to sleep at night. But it's really not that hard. Check out a few on the website. It's part of your assignment. The annual report is much easier to read. Most mutual fund companies, the annual report is easier to read. Some of them, they're not trying to not show you how badly they did. So they have this flowery, did I say that right? Flowery language. But that's your assignment. So you want to take a look, quick look at the assignment? Real fast? Let's take a look, a quick look at the assignment. Okay, what am I doing? Go back to the assignment, mutual fund annual report. And again, this, the information is not as important as the process. Along with the prospectus, one of the most important documents for potential mutual fund investors is the mutual fund annual report. Some are sparse, others are rich, some are easy to read, many are difficult to penetrate. You examine two fund annual reports. And as I said, there's six different companies. There are dozens and dozens of mutual fund families, hundreds, thousands of mutual funds. So, everyone. I have some annual reports that are printed out, but they're old because they don't want to print them out anymore. They kind of told them, American used to give me a bunch of annual reports, and they said they didn't really do that anymore. And I wasn't going to, they would have if I asked, but they're trying to reduce their cost, not printing out so much paper. So, research, use Morningstar, Lipper, Finance, forget Google. And these two are good. And then try your best to find this information, okay? Cool? Thoughts, ideas? Some of it's in the annual report, some of it's online. Go check out Morningstar, check out Lipper. I said Lipper is giving more and more information online now for free, but they have a paywall they want you to go to. Questions, thoughts? And then the other one is the thrift savings plan. I'm sorry? Question?
That's what that means when I get out on commercial service, on average, or something like people look at average annually or whatever. We're always talking about that. I think it's T. Rowe Price or something like that.
They're a good company.
They're talking about how they beat the Lipper average and all that stuff.
As we said, it's very difficult. You should not. Some funds, you really shouldn't compare them against the S&P 500, even though they're stock funds. And so Lipper has these different categories. Are you a growth and income fund, or are you a growth fund, or are you a bond fund? And they have their own categories. And what they do is they go through and they tally up all the different mutual funds and how well they did. And so they tell you an average, and then you compare your fund against those averages. Morningstar will do the same thing. Go online, you'll see it. You'll see if they'll show you against the S&P 500 if it's a stock fund, and then they'll show you against the average, and they'll show you the fund itself, how well it did. So, but they only do it for 10 years, which I hate. I like it when they do for 40 years. I'm old. Okay, now, financial publications. As we said, Morningstar, Lipper, the major, the Business Week, the Forbes, the surveys. I'm not a big fan of these surveys because they often do 3 years or 5 years or even 10 years. I like to see how well companies have done over 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. So 10 years to me, in this case, 10 years is not a very good, because this last 10 years have been very, very different. You go back through time, and we're going to talk about growth versus value. Value has beaten growth over decades, most of the time. There are a few times when growth beats value. The last 10 years, growth has beaten value. In other words, the Facebooks of the world, the Googles of the world have beaten the Johnson & Johnsons of the world. So I don't think 10 years is enough. Morningstar, Business Week, Finance.Yahoo, and then the websites themselves are wealths of information. They have lots of good stuff. Here's one of my favorites. These guys are weird. They are strange. They're based in San Francisco. They've been around since the 30s. You'd think They have five funds. You think San Francisco, right? They have videos, and they have their mutual fund managers talking about the market. And you think San Francisco, very sophisticated, right? No, they look like they're from Kansas. we're investing now and over here right now. Something's weird. When the camera's off, they're all dressed as transvestites or something. I don't know. But they're a great company. Check them out. Check out Dodge and Cox. I really can't figure them out. But they've done very well. They only have five funds. They don't even have a money market fund. I don't know why. And then the mother load. Well, you think San Francisco, right? Sophisticated, you know, right? And they look like they're from Canada. They look like they're from the Midwest. Ooh, yeah.
I'm from Kansas, and I have
yeah? And do the transvestites come out very often in Kansas City? Not sure, yeah. That's because you've never seen them, right? They hide themselves when they're in Kansas because they want to get beat up, right? But in San Francisco, it's like, oh, cool. It's more color. Now, all right, so, really, I mean, it's cultural, right? It's cultural. California, we're much more open. Not everybody. Some people are real closed-minded. But here, we're much more open.
Are you able to, speak in on this company?
Oh, you go to their website. And they have videos. They'll show you insights. Well, they're not usually meetings. They're usually presentations. Okay. They're interviews. Go on my website.
It's not like live feed,
right? No, it's not a live feed. It's definitely they might do two or three takes. I don't know, but they're not the only ones. Check them out. T. Rowe Price has got good information. American. They have a website called thecapitalideas.com, which is sort of a strange website. But if you go to American Funds, you'll see insights. I got the links on the website. And then it'll take you to their website called The Capital Ideas. And they talk about the next 12 months, the last 12 months, what are we thinking, where are we investing. And they started doing this back in the late 90s, and then they all stopped. I guess the SEC got angry at them and said, stop doing that. We don't want you to do that. Your job is to be a mutual fund company. I don't know, but they all stopped. Vanguard had the best. They don't have it anymore, but they had this investing university. It was great. It was really good, and then it just disappeared. So I don't know what happened. But Vanguard's good, so check them out, too. All right, so now, how do you pick a mutual fund company, right? It's not easy, and I'm not going to tell you differently. It's not easy. There are thousands of choices. Now, you're going to have to... go down the aisles and share these guys because I don't have enough. Let's see how much I do have. Can you get together the rows? Get together the rows. Maybe I have enough. All right. Okay. Can you sit next? Yeah. Next. We got extras. We got extras. Okay. Let's pass these over. So maybe we do have enough. Okay. Okay. Anybody need one? Pass one over there. Everybody got one? Okay. Over there. He's back. Okay. Okay. This is not the prospectus. This is a sales. They call it their investor's guide. It's been around for decades. And I'm not trying to sell you ICA. It's a very good company. It's been around since 1934. Very good mutual fund company. But, what I like about it, the reason we use it is because it's been around so long. That's why we use it. And it's pretty good. It's fun at the same time. So in my humble opinion, this is my criteria. You are going to do your own thing. You might be into ETFs and there's, what did you call them? The highly leveraged or something like that? What did you call the ones that you invested in?
The emerging market.
Yeah, but they're juiced. They're juiced. I want you to invest in a company that invests in high quality stocks or bonds. Now there's the problem. What's quality? What quality in one person's eyes is not quality in another person's eyes. Well diversified across several industries and sectors of the economy, global in my humble opinion, and has a long-term perspective and a manager, or better yet, a management team. people who work together but make their own decisions with years of experience. And now that's more and more companies. Because it used to be that Fidelity model, which blew up in their face, but still works for people like Will Danoff of the Contra Fund, was to throw somebody in there, give them $1 billion and see how well they did. How'd you do, kid? Somebody right out of, you know, Harvard or Stanford or someplace. And if they did well after 2 or 3 years, great. Shower them with love and attention and money. And if they didn't, you're gone. Whereas other companies now, American was the ones who they weren't the only ones now. A lot of people have copied them. They have you start slowly. And they have a whole team of people working. And they have people making decisions together. But they don't have to all agree. So there's that dynamism involved. And when somebody leaves, you got people coming up. It's not like the end of the world, where when Will Danoff leaves, I don't know what the hell is going to happen to Contra Fund. We'll see. Maybe they're just going to prop him up in the seat and make him look like he's there. And been around for decades, performed well in good and, more importantly, bad markets. Don't tell me how well you did in good markets. I ain't interested. I want to see how well you did in bad markets. You understand? That's what I want to see. So now, here's one that's been around for over 80 years, has done about 12%, and what I want you to do is pick, go into the middle copy. We'll probably come back to this on Tuesday. Go into the middle, this guy right here. Now, see, you guys aren't young, you're not old enough, but this is, you know, this was Playboy, you know. We had this deal. Well, Centerfold, right, Centerfold. There's a song called Centerfold. Right? So, but the young folks, they got a high-speed internet in their room. They don't need Playboy. Okay, so the industry uses $10,000. Don't ask me why, but you had $10,000 to plunk down on January 1st, actually December 31st, 1933, and go all the way to the right and all the way to the top. What number do you have that $10,000 has become at the end of 2017? The 2018 hasn't come out yet.
$150 million?
At what annual average rate of return? 12%? Remember we said 8, 9, 10%? But there are people out there that have gone 10, 11, 12, 13% over decades. Are you with me? Now, what have bonds done over the long term? 6, right? 7%? They don't have bonds, but what they do have is it's called, if you go down the middle, stock market with dividends excluded, which is about 6.9%. With 6.9%, what did your $10,000 become? Everybody see that? You with me? You with us? Yang, are you with us there? I think you should on the wrong page here. Okay. You got to get the centerfold. You're not, you never had Playboy, right? Here it is, here it is. Okay. Here it is. Oh, I'm sorry. Go over here, near. So do you understand now? Do you understand opportunity cost? If you took your money and put it in the stock market, you got really great returns over time, right? If you put your money in the bond market, it did okay, almost 7%. But what did the difference? 150 million versus 2 million. Now let's say you put it in treasury bills. You put it in the bank. Go to the bottom where it says consumer price index. Now you did a little bit better. What is that? 3.4 or something like that? 3.6. You did a little better, probably 4 or so. But you see what your $10,000 became? About 200 grand. Now do you understand opportunity cost? By putting your money in the bank where it's safe, you missed out on 150 million. By going just with bonds, you still did okay, 2 million, not bad. But you see the opportunity cost? Now, at what cost? Look at 1972. Look at 1972. The bottom number from the bottom up from the bottom. The first number up from the bottom. What's that number? 1,231? That's actually 1,231,000. after 40 years almost, your $10,000 had become $1 million, $1.2 million. What is it in 1974? 2 years later. 840? 840, yeah. Your $1.2 million in 2 years is now 840. Yeah. It's real money. It's a lot different when it ain't real money, is it? It's on paper. But if it were really your money, how would you feel going from 1.2 down to 840? Did you run? Did you hide? What is it in 1976? No, that's the one number from above that. 1,474, whatever. So you see, this is what stock investing is like. In 1987, at the beginning of the year, you had 6 million. By August, you had 9. By December, you had 6 again, right? Okay. And look at 2007. Look at 2007. What did you have in 2007? 74 million? 75 million or so? What'd you have in 2008?
50 cents.
No, you had more than 50 cents.
45 million.
45 million. And when did you finally get back to even to what we had in 2007? Not until 2012, right? I'm sorry, question? No? Okay. So the problem is that this is a logarithmic scale, which we already discussed a little bit. You don't tell people who don't understand math about logarithms because they don't make any sense to people. It doesn't go up in an arithmetic scale. They're trying to show you that in the corner here where they show you the empire, not the empire, the
Statue of Liberty.
They say, thank you very much. They show you the Statue of Liberty, and if this were an arithmetic scale, it'd be, you know, whatever, 10 times bigger than the Statue of Liberty. And that's what exponential growth. That's why future value, we didn't do the calculations, we'll do the present value, but the future value, time, is the exponent. And when you have time and a pretty darn good rate of return, you're going to do well. Unless the world ends. Cool, thoughts, ideas? So, yes, Matthew.
If you hadn't lived through that traumatic 70s experience, you probably would have taken it all out in 2008. But if you had, then you're smart enough to go right through it.
Okay, well, we're gonna continue from here, but how many people have an 85-year time frame? How many people in here have an 85-year time frame? Well, actually, the first person who's going to live to 150 has already been born. So you folks in your 20s, you have an 85-year time frame. Although, you know, looking at technology now, it's like, are you crazy? You're nuts, you know. So how are we doing for time? Not the best. But we'll come back. We'll come back right here. But we're going to show you some more punchlines. But let's go to the bottom. What happens when you have a market downturn? We'll come back to this because it's such an important idea. Keep a long-term perspective and just keep putting your $50, $100 a month in, right? Relax. Now, these guys, they give them to me. They're very happy to give them to me, but we're going to come back to them. So please pass them back up again. Unless you promise me you'll bring them back on Tuesday. You'll bring them back, you promise? So our exam will be next Thursday. So if you want to pass them up. But the important thing is turn off the television. Turn off your cell phone. Don't panic. Just keep putting the $50, $100 a month away. And if the world doesn't end and capitalism delivers the goods and services, you'll do well. Okay, so we'll continue from right here. Hopefully, you're starting to see now what you're up against, but what the rewards are. So next Tuesday, we'll finish up this guy. We've got some case studies to do, and then we'll have the exam next Thursday. So are you listening, anybody at home? Exam next Thursday.